Hello, and welcome to Create a Way with Art Bundes, a podcast that explores the creative journey and overcoming adversity. I'm your host, Wendy Fadan, and today I'm talking with Michael Washington, an independently published author. We'll be speaking about his book, Children of Babylon, and his writing journey. A little bit about Michael. Michael was raised in Oberlin, Ohio, and his first love was originally rap. Between the profane lyrics, the stories of people making it through expressions, and pictures painted by diverse minds, he was and still is obsessed. The seed of literature, though, was planted in Ms. Pratt's language arts class in Langston Middle School, when he was introduced to the concept and dissection of poetry. It was everything he loved about rap. As he grew, his personal rap book evolved into short stories that evolved into full-length narratives. Writing also became an escape for Michael. There came an immaculate feeling, creating worlds with a stroke of the pen or a click of the key. He self-published two short story and poetry books and is now embarking on the journey of novels. Children of Babylon is the first of three in a series he plans to make. Michael's aim as a writer is to offer a momentary escape, whether it be through a story or a message. All right, so I'm talking with Michael Washington. He's the author of Children of Babylon, and I'm really looking forward to learning more about his writing journey and his self-publishing journey. I know a little bit about him, but looking forward to learning a lot more. So welcome, Michael.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me tonight. Yeah. It is an honor. It is a pleasure. And hopefully it is the first of many interviews in both our fields.
Awesome. Well, I'd love to hear, I'd like to hear about people's background, you know, and see like what their journey towards writing was. So right. I'd love to hear for you to share about that. I know you've got the love, you've got a history of your love of rap, and how it'll be interesting to hear about how that has morphed into your love of writing as well.
Right. Well, like I said, it all begins at rap. Rap is the root of it. You know, as a kid, I loved all the wrong things about rap. I loved the profanity. I loved the gangster rap. I love, you know, all the bad things, that everything that your parent didn't want you to hear about it. I loved it for that. But as I grew up, as I got older and matured, I realized how skilled these artists are as far as their penmanship goes. And as far as painting a picture, even if that picture is something vulgar, you know, something offensive, it's still that picture is painted. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in a way they give you, in rap, they give their truths. You get their truth. Back in the day when it was not politically correct, rap was not always politically correct. And so you got that person's reality of it. And you either liked it or loved it. And I take that approach with my writing, just because as far as being unapologetically Michael, just be you. You're not writing for anybody, and for certain people. For certain people, they have audiences they want to reach out for, you know, whether that audience is a literal audience or a metaphorical audience. But they have, you know, I always told myself that I just want to write a great story. I want to offer an escape, the same escape that rap music has offered me, and that, you know, that evolved into writing, you know, offer an escape, basically.
I love that statement, unapologetically Michael.
Yeah, thank you.
That's great. I love that. Oh, wow. So yeah, so the seed of literature, you wrote to me, was planted in middle school in the language arts class. Yes. And so poetry seemed to be your, as far as literature went, kind of your introduction, and yes, linking up to the rap, your passion, your interest in rap.
Right. It was, I remember Miss Pratt, and she got, this was back in seventh grade, and she got married then. So I don't know her married last name, but her name was Miss Pratt at the time, and she loved me. She loved how I was a rascal. I was one of those lovable rascals as a kid. But how she explained it to me. I just remembered it being in a rap album, in all the great rap albums, there is always that one song that is about life, that is very personal, that is very intimate. And that to me is what poetry is. Poetry is that one track where you're just like, time freezes for a second. Time freezes and, you know, there is no more money, there's no girls, there's no clothes. It is just, here I am by myself with these thoughts. And with poetry, I was just like, oh, so you just want me to write a deep rap, a notebook full of deep rap. Like, okay, I can do that. And it helped, and better, because I was a terrible rapper as a kid. Terrible, god awful. And it helped me. Poetry became an exercise for me to get better at rapping. For me, it was a challenge. English class was always something like, okay, I know I'm gonna go to language arts class today and I'm gonna write a great rap later on. Like, it was something you look forward to. It was like, okay, one's gonna sharpen the other type thing.
Yeah, so that's really cool. So you had a rap, a personal rap book, you called it. So it's kind of like a journal keeping all your rap poetry.
Right.
It's kind of like this record that you kept throughout your school years. Is that right?
Correct. Yes. I want to say up until my freshman year, I would go through notebooks like socks. It would just filling up. And I would say, if you ask me, I have 15 albums that have yet to be released.
That's great.
And that work ethic of just sitting at the kitchen table and writing, telling yourself you're going to write 3 pages of something. Like, we don't know if it's going to be good, bad, or ugly, but it's going to be something. That also developed my discipline as a writer. Saying, okay, we're gonna write this chapter. It does not have to be perfect. It does not have to be Stephen King. But we're gonna write this today, write this chapter today, so that we can move on. And we're gonna, you know, the process of writing, of course, is you edit after it's all done. And so that discipline of just sitting down and doing it definitely was started with writing raps at the dinner table.
That's cool. That's cool. Yeah, I was just talking to my son today. He's been getting into painting a lot. Mm-hmm. And he said something to me today. And I was just really happy to hear him say, which was, I guess I don't have to wait for inspiration to happen. I can just go ahead and paint something, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
Do it's that.
Just, yeah. Yeah. It's I want to say it was the jazz musician Thelonious Monk. And they used to always say when he would play piano and he would just, his style, if you ever listen to him, it sounds erratic. It sounds all over the key. A key is hitting where it shouldn't be hitting. But they would say he would just get up and dance sometimes. And it's like, sometimes when you find that flow, whatever you are, your creative flow, it just takes as simple as a flip of a switch and you can do whatever. You can tap dance with it. You can, you know, just do whatever with it. And so, yeah, that's awesome that he found that. He's like, you are your inspiration, basically. Yeah. Your drive and your love, that is your inspiration.
Exactly.
So that's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, and when you're talking about, you know, keeping a personal book or, you know, collection of work, yeah, that reminds me of when I was actually growing up. I my teacher encouraged us to keep a journal of our writings. And I was one of those kids also who just filled them up like crazy.
Right.
I was just really grateful that they gave out these blank books. But what was kind of interesting, the blank books that they would give out in my class was half of the book, like the top half of the page was blank, and then the rest of the page was filled with lines. So I kind of grew up with that interest of, you know, filling up the top half with a picture and then writing something underneath it. So I don't know if it's because of that or what, but you know, my interest in like writing and illustrating pretty much grew at the same time, I think, because of that.
So. Right. And I swear, like nowadays, it's one can say illustration and writing is the 1-2 punch of literature, really, because it's like I can give you the most profound poems or profound novel at all I can never think of. But if there's no cover to it and it's just a blank thing, that is what draws you. It has to communicate something. The art, you know, there is also art in the illustrators being able to communicate so much in just a picture. So like, I don't want you to give, here's this whole story, but just give them a little pinch of it.
Give
some of the theme to it. And like I said, I definitely have my collaborator, Aurora, I definitely have so much love for her. As far as how much hard work, and she does all my covers for the books I've self-published, and she works so hard, and you know, I'm forever grateful for her hard work as far as her digital graphic designing with my covers. So I just wanted to give her a little shout out, because like I said, we are definitely collaborators, and you know, without such a wonderful cover to give to present to someone, it's hard to get any reader's attention with that without that. So.
That's right. And your cover image is quite a powerful image, I have to say. Yeah. And so it really gets your attention. So I'd love for you to talk, and I will be adding a link, of course, in the description, below of your book and everything. So that'll be great. If you could, yeah, I'd love for you to talk now about your book and talk a little bit about that. And what inspired you to write this book?
Okay, so I will begin. Everybody's asked me about this book, and I'm trying to find ways to explain it without telling the story, because
I know that's hard.
But the I guess the easiest way is the inspiration of it. I want to say in the 1940s or 50s, there's a community called the Greenwood community in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and this is Jim Crow era segregated Tulsa, Oklahoma. And it was an all black, they called it Black Wall Street. And all the businesses were black owned, thrived stupendously, considering the hill of oppression they had to go against at that time. They thrived wonderfully. And unfortunately, this community was bombed by their neighbors for being basically black and successful and being more successful than them.
Interesting.
And now, you know, and that's a whole, I definitely urge people to look into that, because that's a whole another can of worms that definitely should be talked about and looked at. But so you fast forward. So where my story comes in is this is the Domino community. The Domino community was a segregated community where they sent all the black people to live. And if you could picture, since we're talking Lorain County, we're familiar, I'm sure, with Lorain County, it's probably the distance between Elyria, and you have all these fields, just country and just field, and then you get to Oberlin.
Oh, okay.
Oberlin would be Domino, but imagine them being considered the same city.
Okay.
But that's how segregated they are, as far as, you guys need your own spot. We don't want you. And they would send, and the people that lived in the city would send the people that they didn't want, the sex offenders, the addicts, you know, the criminals, they would send them the Domino.
Oh boy.
And so what happens is, you know, I, once again, being the inspiration of this being, you know, also being Black Wall Street, I wanted to see, okay, what if they were never bombed? What if they just thrived? What if they survived? What if they are still a community? But what if crack still hit it? But what if instead of crack hitting it, they didn't just become a victim of crack? But they became a victim of crack, but not in the sense of using it, but a sense of distributing it.
Oh, okay.
You know, what if this idea of pull yourself by the bootstraps, I want to say was Booker T. Washington's statement, pull yourself up, take care of yourself. What if that was mutated? What if, you know, somehow some way they and you know, and in the setting, it is the agreement between the head of the domino community and the head of the city, the mayor of the city, was you guys can keep sending your criminals, your this, that, and the third to us, but then you guys cannot police us. Mm. We are our own law. We make up our own rules. We are our own principality almost. On paper, you can say we're part of the city, but we all know you can't come here at all. And so so that is the background of it. That is the geography, I guess, of it, background of it. And in this story, so sorry, long story longer. we are introduced to Diego and Achilles. These are the head of Domino, the Domino family, Domino community. For lack of a better term, the drug lord has just been killed.
Okay.
By somebody in Domino. It was an inside job. And this is a, once they, so they're dashing for power of this throne of Domino. Both these men, Achilles, who is basically the informant, and that's lack of a better term, more of a double agent, because he works for the police force of the city, but he was raised in Domino. And so he is almost like the chancellor, the representative between the city. He goes and talks to the head of Domino when the mayor wants to have something to say, or when the head of police wants to say something. They can't go see him. They go through Achilles. And then you have Diego, who is, he is quoted in the book, The Black Plague. He is the main hitman. And I don't want to tell you too much about either of their backstories, because their backstories are told in the third book.
Okay.
And so, but those are the two consistent characters, but they are after this throne, and the cartel that is also located in Domino does not want to do business with anyone other than the head of Domino's bloodline. And he has two sons whose names are Ha and Judah, who want nothing to do with the kingdom that their dad left them. You have Judah, who has been the neglected child, who, you know, one can look at as a spoiled prince. When I don't want it because he had it, I'm just rebellious because I don't like my dad type reason. And then you have Ha, who just loves being in the gutter, who just loves being in the dope houses and being in the filth, and just loves the genuineness that comes with someone we're dealing with these kind of people, because they don't care enough to lie to you type thing. He knows he can trust these people because, you know, he's just as crazy as them. He's the quote unquote wild card. And so neither of them want anything to do with the kingdom, but the cartel needs one of their permissions to hand it off to either Diego or Achilles.
Wow.
So along with that, everybody's trying to figure out who killed the head of the Domino family, which his name is Scholar. So everybody's trying to figure out who killed Scholar on Diego. So on Diego's side, everybody's trying to figure out who killed Scholar. He's trying to get Ha to pass him over it, you know, give him power, give me reins. And then on Achilles' side, he's trying to get Judah to give him the keys to the kingdom, while the heads of the city are like, what's going on? Why, we didn't plan this, so what's going on? Like, nobody should, in the people who run the mayor's mind, he's like, nobody should die unless I say so. So why is somebody dead without me saying okay? Huh. Like, why, they're very, and so they're just like, can you handle it? Because if you can't handle it, then we have to take over Domino and we have to get rid of this deal. And so I apologize if that's a very vague explanation.
Oh, no.
It's a three book series. It's, when you read the first book, you're gonna have a lot of questions. and I'm not going to be able to answer them.
You got to read the next book to get the answers, right?
Well, even the next book will offer you. Honestly, I would say that the answers aren't answered until the third one.
Uh-huh.
Because the third book is the origin stories. The third book shows you how Scholar came to power, how, you know, but.
Well, that's the thing with series too. You want to leave some mystery open. You don't want to answer all the questions. You want to leave the, you know, something for the reader to question about so that they can be motivated to read the next book and then the next book. So
exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So, wow. Sounds like a very epic. So when did you start writing this series?
Oh, I started book one maybe 2 years ago.
Okay.
And I had to stop because I had to get out of my comfort zone as a writer.
Okay.
With this book, there are many parts, and there are many hard parts and hard chapters because there's no good guys. There is no protagonist.
I was wondering about that. I was wondering, if there's some like angel in the story, some.
I can't say, and I feel like it would be, and I was just thinking about it before the interview. I would consider it. It would be more like a Rorschach painting, okay. In the sense that if you find good in a person, it's because your mind is pushing it in a way to rationalize something messed up that they just did. Because, like I said, even there are selfish motivations behind every little thing they do.
Okay.
Because there's selfish behind, you know, motivation behind everything they do. And at the end of the day, they all just want, they either want to be left alone with no responsibility or they want power.
Yeah. I can't remember what the term is for those kinds of heroes in a story, the ones,
anti-hero.
Yeah.
I could say there's probably some anti-heroes. I would say if there was an anti-hero, it would be Diego.
Okay.
But we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, as he develops, we'll see how long he keeps that.
Yeah.
We'll definitely see how long he keeps that. Because I have not, I've started book two, but I'm still figuring out.
Yeah.
It's like you know where you want to go, but you're just writing the map. You're just got to go through. You're just like, but yes. But no, I try to avoid any terms like good or bad guys, at least with this story, because it's like, this is just in a word, because, you know, a community built off drug money sounds terrible to one person.
Yeah.
But if you were to tell me at age 11 that, like, how would you like to build a community? How would you like to run Oberlin and just off drug money? Where I was as a kid, a badass little kid, I'm like, yeah, that sounds awesome. That sounds awesome. Scarface, you know?
Yeah, Scarface, yeah.
Right. And so I kind of wanted to give you a lens, like, you know, in somebody's twisted mind, this is a great, this is a utopia.
Yeah.
In somebody's twisted mind, man, this, you telling me that they don't got to deal with the police? Like, this is utopia, but at the same time, I'm showing you, you know, watch out quick, that can break.
Yeah.
Like, and it will always fall from within. But as I don't try to have any message. I feel like a lot of people are going to try to, one will try to find a message behind the madness in the story. And there is none. There is no theme. There is no message. I simply am offering the reader an escape. I'm simply offering you an escape. Here's a story. I always like to think, what if some of the great, we do all this hard thinking and trying to figure out, like, what if we, you know, we get to heaven and you, all these famous writers are asking Edgar Allan Poe, like, oh, what inspired you about the raven? Was it this? And they're giving you this interpretation, and he's just like, no, I just saw a bird, and I thought it was cool. I just saw a bird and it just came to me. Like, I didn't have any type of, like, and so I feel like when you don't, I feel like those are the best stories are the ones that are just like, yeah, I just wanted to tell you a story. Like, it's, you know, it's cool. Whatever conclusions they draw from that, they draw from the story, I'm all for it, because at least that's helping you. It's making you think. It's making it's giving your brain some push-ups to do. But like I said, I can't say that there is any message. I can say I drew from the Greenwood community of Tulsa, Oklahoma, and the tragedy that happened to them as inspiration. But at the same time, I wanted to mutate their dream. I wanted to, it sounds terrible, but I wanted to mutate their dream just because, you know, I'm somewhat of a historian, you know, and there was no, I can't name one Black community that was not hit by the crack era. No matter how, you know, pristine they were in the 50s and the 60s, and, you know, Malcolm X walked down this street, Martin Luther King walked over there, you know, no matter what, life happens.
Yeah.
Things evolve into something. What things evolve, whether they're what they're meant to be and what they weren't meant to be. And, you know, I guess it's the difference between, you know, evolving and mutating. It's like, is it evolution or is it mutation? And in this case, with Children of Babylon, it is the mutation of the idea of Black Wall Street. It's the best way to put if somebody wanted to make, like, tell us the plot. No, it's like the mutation of Black Wall Street. That's the best way I can give you.
That's great. Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Wow. So before we close up, I want to ask also what your self-publishing experience was like, and what motivated you to self-publish the book?
My self-published experience has been up and down, but it has been fun. It has been, I'm learning something every time. I'm learning the importance of, you know, finding the right texture to the book, you know, to the physical book. What's going to feel right? It's going to feel right with its, if it's going to be binded, if it's going to be, you know, look, and, you know, this type of pages that's going to be, what's good for this, what's good for that. And, you know, it's a good experience, and it also teaches self-efficiency. It also, you know, I have so many friends. I have a cousin, Monica. She always tells me about her friends. She was like, she wants to write a book, but she never has the time. I'm just like, life happens, yes, but you got to put yourself in a situation. Unfortunately, it's like I have the saying: either you pursue your purpose, or your purpose is going to pursue you. So it's like you're going to be who you were meant to be, but it's, you know, you're going to let it. You're going to have it chase you down, and it's going to chase you down. It's going to haunt you if you're going to put it off, or you can just chase it. You know, and it's going to be either one. Both are hard. It's just about, like, as they say, choose your heart. You know, and I feel like with self-publishing, it offers, you know, it also gives you a chance to look at yourself as a writer. Like, do you really want to write? Do you really want to, or do you want to be famous? Yeah. You know, I hear the same thing about actors. I've acted before, and they always, are you passionate about acting, or are you passionate about being in a movie? Or, you know, are you passionate about learning how to block a scene, or are you passionate about being on Broadway? Like, what you have to, it really lets you know, you know, when it's all up to you, when it's like, okay, here it is, do it.
Yeah, that is excellent.
Thank you.
Amen.
Thank you. It's just like, here, like, and then, you know, we're so great. We're so blessed to live in a day and age where you can go on. So I personally use Barnes & Noble Press to publish it, and where you can just go there for free and publish your book. And, you know, they take out what they need to out of your purchases, but to be able to say that you have a book published in itself is a confidence booster, because dozens of people say they want to publish books. Dozens of people say they want to do this and that. And, like, but here it is. We have the technology today where you can be an author. You don't need a publisher to tell you you're an author.
Yeah.
You know, like, you don't, like, nowadays, you don't need a record deal to tell you you're a musician. You can just get a microphone, plug it to your laptop, and get the right, you know, God knows it's much more complicated than that, but it's a lot more, a lot more accessible.
Yeah, I love that. And as you know, I'm a huge proponent of self-publishing. So that's very inspiring. And I'm always inspired to hear an author's story of, you know, how they made that happen for themselves. That's true dedication. And kudos to you for making that happen.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I definitely, I self-publishing, whether it be through, there's something I learned through this. I'm just like, doing it yourself, going the indie route is so much more, is so much fulfilling. Yeah. You know, I wouldn't have to say, not to say that I would turn down a publishing contract. God knows I want it. But
of course.
But to say to, for, but for you to be able to say, like, I don't got to, I can write what I want to write.
Yeah.
I can write when I want to write. I can take the creative process, creative time I want to take. I can, you know, is it glamorous? Absolutely not. But we're not in, we don't write for glamour. We don't write for glamour. We write, I have a saying, we write for eternity. We write to be so that we are remembered. You know, I always leave, you know, I as a young, and this may sound a bit dull, but it's how I view things. I understand that some people's works don't get credit in their lifetime.
Yeah.
Especially in nowadays, technological as we are, a lot of people don't buy books nowadays. But at the same time, we don't do it for them. We don't do it for those who don't buy books. They're doing it for the ones who do buy them. And so, as long as there's something, as long as people can read, they're gonna, you know, there's always gonna, people still buy bindings. So obviously the idea of something going out of style is losing its tangibility. And so we write to be remembered in eternity with Ralph Waldo, with Emerson, with Thoreau, with Poe, that with Shakespeare, that's who we wanna be remembered as. At least with me, I mean, I don't wanna speak for every writer, but I know that as a writer, I write to be remembered.
Yeah.
I write to be remembered, and I write to offer an escape.
Yes. Yes. Oh, amen. I love your words. I love your statements. Yes. You. So Michael, this has been an absolute joy speaking with you. And
it's been an honor. It's been an honor for me. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And I will be, I'm looking forward to having this podcast out and promoting your work. And God bless you.
God bless you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
What a great conversation I had with Michael. He and I grew up with totally different musical interests, so it was really cool hearing his point of view on rap and its influence on him as a writer. As usual, I like ending my podcast with an art assignment relating to the conversation I had with my guest. And for this episode, I feel inspired by Michael's words. Either you pursue your purpose, or your purpose is going to pursue you. It's a great reminder that whether you pursue your purpose or not, your purpose is right there with you. It will not stop chasing you. It's the grand question, what is my purpose? Well, without thinking about it, when you're in a time and place where you can write something down, here's your art assignment of the day. Write the word purpose, but write it vertically on a piece of paper or in your journal. P, then below it on the next line, U, the next line below that, R, and so on. For each letter of the word purpose, use that letter as a prompt to write whatever word or phrase comes into your head. And try not to use purpose as the first word for the letter P. Try not to think of the word purpose at all, actually. Just think of those seven letters. P-U-R-P-O-S-E. Use your intuition to just see what comes through without thinking too much. After doing this simple writing exercise, writing a word or phrase for each letter, take a look at what you've written and see if anything comes through for you. Are there any interesting surprises that you've found? And if so, jot down some notes in your journal of any thoughts that have come through. Again, it was such a joy to meet Michael Washington, and please check out his book, Children of Babylon, at the link in the description below. I hope you have a wonderful day, and remember, you can always create a way.